Yes. Feeling very mellow today. I think the odds of you getting a rant fest are pretty low. I just want to chill. Regardless of how relaxed I am with my feet propped up, it's still true that you are wrong and I am right. Yep. No matter how mellow and relaxed I am, those are the ultimate truths that will always be true. That's why they're ultimate truths. That's why I'm the Great One himself. That's why this is the Stating the Obvious podcast, the weapons platform from which I launch cruise missile of my intellect that homes in on and destroys stupid fucking statist all around the world. Yep. Randy, I could totally go to sleep right now. I am on the edge of consciousness. Ah, shit. Alright, hang on. Okay, microphone rotated. How's that? Hi there, folks. I am the Great One himself, founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. You can find us on the internet, cynlibsoc.com. In the control room over there, she's more awake than I am, is the lovely and adorable Randy, and I am the Great One himself. I might have mentioned that already. You can send us email, God, it's dog spelled backwards, God at cynlibsoc.com. Yep. Yeah, so it's finally summer here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. Global warming has finally done its job and kicked in. Alright, I will say this much. You know what, Randy, I think I need to turn the fan off, because the fan blowing on me is totally going to put me to sleep. What's that? That's a good idea. Thank you. We'll put it on rotate so it's not blowing on me the whole time. I really am primed for a nap. I'm not bullshitting you guys. It's Sunday. Today is April. No, it's not April anymore. It's May. May the 4th? Is it May the 4th? I don't know what the fuck today is. The fuck is a device. Here we go. Yeah, Sunday, May 4th. Holy shit. Thank God for technology. I keep up with important shit like that. Sunday, May 4th. Slept in this morning after a long night of theater. Got up this morning, went for a nice little run. There was some kind of other run going on, like an organized run, so saw quite a few little cute babes out running this morning. And as I was running, I was going through an area. It's one of the areas here in Fort Collins that got flooded when we had the flood a while back, and so they finished rebuilding some of it and opened it back up. Not that you can really, you know, I mean, not that you can close the fucking outdoors, but of course the government thinks they can. Just like during the evil government shutdown when Obama closed the national forest, you know, because we're gonna, the fucking forest can't survive without government funding, of course. But yeah, parts of the trail were officially closed, which means you had to go around the orange barriers in order to go inside them. And got down there this weekend, and apparently they finished up whatever they were doing and reopened the trail. So I was running in the area where I've normally been running for like 10 years. And as I was zapping through there, I saw this trail that I'd never noticed before. So I followed it to see where it went, and it pops out in this little park that I never even knew existed. So just goes to show, it's always new stuff. Of course, soon college will be out. CSU will be shutting down. Well, not shutting down. The current semester will be over. All the kids that leave for the summer will go. And then Fort Collins will become still the People's Republic. But it'll become quieter because a bunch of the college kids are going to leave. And that'll be nice. That'll be very pleasant. Fan, stop it. I'm right at the end of the arc. So then, got home. Made me some nice salmon with some green beans and some shrimp and some olives. Oh, it was delicious. Then I went out in the yard, sat in the lawn chair, tried to stay awake while reading a book. And oh, the sunshine was glorious. Oh, summer. I'm so happy. Because we had winter, and we had winter, and we had some more winter. And then we had spring. Yeah, it's me yawning. I'm telling you, I'm going to fall asleep during this podcast. We had spring for 3 or 4 days, and we had winter again, and we had some more winter, and then we had spring for about 17 or 18 seconds, and then we had winter, and then we had Wyoming, which means wind, and now Wyoming is finally gone, and winter went away, and it's summer. It's really nice. And I know, you're people out there, you're listening to this, you're saying, nobody really gives a fuck. Nobody really cares. It's like, hey, great one, what are you, a fucking old person who just talks about the weather? Well, let me tell you, kids, my knee really hurts. And the other day, I passed a kidney stone. Oh, I was terrible. You know, whippersnappers don't know what it's like. Yeah. Shut up, old people. Serious, Randy, I'm like ready for nap time. All right, let me see if I can wake up. Let's talk about some stuff. I got stuff to talk about. The book I started reading today, Outside in the Sunshine, worked on my fucking a little bit of sunshine on my white ass skin too, so I had to look like a ghost all the time. Is yep, that was me yawning. Then I also had cheesecake. I ate some cheesecake. So that nullified all the calories I burned while running this morning. I instantly got back by eating the fucking cheesecake. So that was a brilliant move right there. The book I'm reading that I started is called Drunk Tank Pink. It's Adam Alter, A-L-T-E-R, is the guy who wrote it. Drunk Tank Pink and Other Unexpected Forces That Shape How We Think, Feel, and Behave. Pretty interesting so far. It's about all the different ways in which, oh, I bookmarked something here. It's about all the different ways in which people can be manipulated without really knowing it. You know, for example, he talks about how your name influences your outcome, how people with simple, easy to pronounce names, I don't want to make like these weird sweeping generalizations, but I also don't want to talk in depth about the stuff he talks about. Okay, so he talks about benefits and problems with names. You know, for example, if you have names that are short and easy to pronounce versus names that are longer and difficult to pronounce or longer and have difficult spellings and such as that. And a lot of this you can intuit if you're not a statist and you're intelligent. You know, he talks about how names reveal socioeconomic status. Like, girls named Angel tend to come from poorer families than girls named Rachel. And, of course, he talks about how names can give away ethnic identity and how that can influence things. He talked about the study where a group of people sent out identical resumes to a number of different companies, the only difference in the resumes being the names on them. So they sent the resume, you know, Tom Brown, which is obviously a white person, and then, you know, like Jamal Johnson or something, which is going to obviously be a black person. And they looked at the statistics on that and how the resumes which had black sounding names got fewer responses, and of course they got those responses from the HR departments, which are staffed, I almost said manned, they got those fewer responses, of course, from HR departments, which are staffed primarily by women. So when you're looking for your racism, don't forget to look any further than the female of the species, and we'll talk about the female of the species a little bit more in this episode. What else do we got here? Yeah, so Fairchild versus Poninsky, the smoothly fluent and awkward disfluent. He talks about how politicians with easy to pronounce names tend to win over politicians with difficult to spell or difficult to pronounce names, and how people will admit that, yeah, we're just voting based on names. And of course, I know that. I'm pretty sure I've talked about that before. That's why democracy doesn't work. You know, cuddly names versus powerful names. Then, of course, he talks about labeling, and he thankfully mentions that the myth that the Eskimos or the Inuits have 50 different words for snow is actually not true. But he talks about how people in, where is it? Is it England? No, it's Russia. Apparently in Russia, they have two different words for blue. They have one word for dark blue and one word for light blue, whereas we just call it blue. And so he talks about a study where the Russians having the ability to differentiate from to differentiate light blue from dark blue gave them an advantage over Americans who just have the word blue. And this was, you know, a study just comparing colors and stuff. But the point is to illustrate certain things. There's also this really interesting one in here. And this is a picture. It has some pictures and graphics. This is on, if you happen to have the book, it's on page 31. And so it shows three faces, and there's no hair and there's no ears. It's just the face, the forehead, eyes, nose, mouth, chin. It's just that part. And they're labeled left to right. You have black, ambiguous, and white. And they have the features that you would expect to find with that, right? So the black person has black looking features, the white person has white looking features, Caucasian looking features, as opposed to African looking features, if we want to be slightly more specific, because of course black and white don't really mean anything. And then the ambiguous, so you know, the African looking face has fuller lips and a wider nose, and in this particular picture the eyebrows are maybe a little bit higher, and then of course the white face has the thinner lips and the thinner nose. And as I'm reading it, you know, and I'm just making all the connections I would normally make, and then he, and I'm looking at the picture and I'm going, okay, yeah, I can see why people thought this. And then he mentions in the text that if you cover up the facial features and just look at the foreheads, you will notice that all three faces actually have the exact same skin tone or color, whatever you want to refer to it. I'm like, really? No shit. And it's true. When you cover it up, you can see that the quote-unquote black face, the actual tonality of the black face, is no more black. It's the same fucking color and tonality as the Caucasian face. So the only difference comes from the features, not the actual tonality. And of course, this brings back the, you know, and he talks about how yada, yada, yada about skin color. And of course, this brings back the memories of the George Zimmerman trial, where the media went out of their way to Photoshop George Zimmerman in order to make him look as white as possible, as Caucasian as possible, so as to make sure that this could be presented as, you know, a race killing, as a white man killing a black child, yada, yada, yada. He talks about labeling and how labeling is important, and the swastika, and how, you know, and how stupid people, I'll talk about this for a second. You know, the swastika, for those of you who don't know, for those of you who don't know what a swastika is, that's the Nazi symbol. Because I know there's a lot of you out there who went to public school who don't even know it as anything other than the symbol of the Nazis. And that's really sad. And this is, it occurred to me as I was reading this, this is one of the problems with living in a culture where information is so widely disseminated and where people are so easily brainwashed at the same time. Because the swastika, before the Nazis adopted it as their symbol, it meant other things. Let me actually read from the book here briefly. I'm not going to read long paragraphs or anything. To the Buddhist, the symbol represented eternity. To some Hindus, the shape represented the god Garsh, G-A-N-E-S-H-A. I have no clue how to pronounce that correctly. Gishna. And to the Panamanic Kunayala people, I probably fucked that up too, it represented the octopus that created the world. And so you have a symbol like the swastika, which has multiple meanings to multiple different cultures, and yet because the Nazis adapted it and gave it a particular meaning, and then because information disseminates so quickly and so many people become used to seeing it in the context of the Nazi symbol, and because those people are so brainwashed that they can't understand that the symbol has different meanings. This, of course, means you can't ever display a swastika without being called a Nazi, because the average people are too stupid to understand it has more than one meaning. And that's another great example of the problem where things like democracy and the internet, the widespread dissemination, the widespread education, the widespread understanding, as you smear it over a larger group of people, it always has to come down to the lowest common denominator, right? The average person can't understand, because they're not smart enough to understand, that a symbol like the swastika has more than one meaning to more than one group of people. And so because the majority of people aren't intelligent enough to go beyond that, the people who are intelligent enough to go beyond it still have to lower themselves to the common denominator of pretending the swastika is only the symbol of the Nazi party and nothing else. And this is one more reason why we need to allow natural selection to take place and for the stupid people to die off and kill themselves and starve to death, and we need to stop giving them food stamps and welfare and WIC and all this other shit. And he talks about the abilities to manipulate people subliminally using images and stuff like that. He talks about money. Oh, I know why I marked that. I need to look that up. He talks about money as a symbol and how people exposed to money become more frugal, more miserly, whatever you want to call it. He talks about social isolation. This is all in the first less than 100 pages. He also talks about, this is an interesting experiment, and I can totally see how this would work. And this brings back, of course, the images of the Big Brother posters and all this other stuff. But at, where was it? The psychology department at the Newcastle University in Northern England. So in the kitchen, they had a honor system. They had a little box where you drop the coins in, right? They wanted 30 pence for tea, 50 pence for coffee, and 10 pence for milk. But the honor system wasn't working very well, which is always fascinating because, remember, this is at Newcastle University. This is at a Institute of Higher Learning. Right, so institute, it's just like in America. Where are all the women getting raped at? College campuses. Because, you know, that's the nexus of political correctness. Where do you have football coaches fucking little boys? College campuses. Because they're the nexus of political correctness. Where do we have, I've talked so much about this, you go back in the archives, back in the days when I worked at Colorado State University, and just listen to all the stories I've told about the corruption at CSU, and there is a big thing over at the, God, what department was it? Microbiology, where the director and this other chick were embezzling like millions and millions of dollars, you know, and all this happens at a college campus, the nexus of political correctness. You know, where do students drink themselves to death with alcohol poisoning? College campuses, the nexus of political correctness. Who is it? I mean, I don't know about other places. Who is it in Fort Collins? There, since I've lived in Fort Collins, there have been multiple riots in Fort Collins. Every single one of them has been started near CSU campus by CSU students. Where do these things happen? College students who go to college, which is the nexus of political correctness. So anyhow, here at Newcastle University, a nexus of political correctness, people were taking coffee and tea and milk and not paying for it because, you know, they believe in fairness and tolerance and diversity and, you know, fairness and fairness and, you know, fairness, which is the fucking watchword of liberals, fairness. So anyhow, for their experiment, they tried putting, for 10 weeks, they tried putting pictures over the little donation box, and they alternated. So on odd-numbered weeks, they had a picture that showed eyes, like human eyes, looking at you. And on the even-numbered weeks, they had pictures that had flowers in them. Shockingly, not really shockingly, that's a joke, without any surprise at all, the weeks that the photo with the eyes was over the, I almost call it a donation box. It's not a donation. It's the box where you're supposed to, of your own free will, fairly pay for what you're taking out of the kitchen, you know, because of fairness and equality and all other stuff that liberals who go to colleges and work in colleges can't shut up about. So anyhow, the mere suggestion that people were being watched was enough to get them to put money in the box when normally they wouldn't and didn't. And social isolation and deriving reality by comparing yourself to other people. Now this is some really interesting things too. Because he talked, and then of course that leads into mimicry. He talks about, let's talk about statism. He talks about how people decide what is normal and what is right and wrong based on the actions of other people around them. And then, of course, they mimic other people's actions, which, again, is why we need to, instead of keeping these stupid people alive, this is why we need to be letting the stupid people die. This is why we need to get rid of the welfare and the WIC and the Social Security and all this other shit. We need to let these people fucking die. Because human beings, I may have mentioned this before on the podcast, I'm pretty sure I have, human beings are sheep for the most part, especially average people. Exceptional people are not sheep. Exceptional people do things and create things. You know, Tesla. I'm too lazy to come up with any good example. You know, and then you throw out Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and, Genghis Khan. You know, I said this before, Genghis Khan, Adolf Hitler. I mean, they're bad people, but they were also not sheep, right? Adolf Hitler was a lot of things. He was not a sheep because sheep don't make history. Sheep don't change the world. Sheep don't take a symbol like the swastika and ruin it for everybody else on the planet. Oh, I need a drink. Just in case you're wondering or care, it's not alcohol. It's almost too hot for alcohol right now. I'm actually too late. God, if I drank a beer right now, I'd be dead, or anything else for that matter.
A martini would be good.
But I'd fall asleep. So anyhow, average people look at the other people around them to determine what's normal and what's not normal. Like, you know, and he talks about examples like clothing. How do you know what is normal and acceptable clothing to wear at, say, you know, a given time, to a given place, at a given event, whatever? Well, you look at the other people there and you make your decisions based on that. And then, based on what the other people are wearing, that's what you wear, based on what other people are doing. You know, this is why, this is how ideas like global warming, which is obviously bullshit to anybody who knows anything about science, and I mean man-made global warming, I don't mean climate change. Let's talk about climate change. I'm still listening to the audiobook Why the West Rules. This book is absolutely fantastic. The book itself is huge. I don't know how many pages. It's across the room. I'm not going to get up and get it. This book, oh my God. I've talked about this before, but this book is absolutely just fascinating in the scope of what it's covering and the information. Again, it's called Why the West Rules for Now. And it's great. You really need to read this book. But, you know, in this book, he talks at great length about how climate change, which happened before Republicans were elected president of the United States, I mean, climate change has always happened. And he talks about how climate change has influenced history. You know, the climate changes, and so the Mediterranean area becomes drier, and, you know, the climate changes, and Europe becomes wetter or drier, or, you know, whatever. And this has happened over and over and over throughout history, and we know this because some people actually are scientists, and they understand things like the climate changes over time, and we have lots of evidence of this, both in the writings of people and from evidence of things like tree rings and all the other ways that people get evidence of the past climate, and none of it involves bizarre computer models that are always wrong. I'm trying to figure out how exactly I got to climate. Oh yeah, because stupid people, and this is, again, why do people believe that there's never been climate change in the past, and that climate change is happening now for the first time ever? And that when it happens, everyone's going to die, and all life on the planet Earth is going to go extinct. You know, I mean, how do people believe something that stupid? Well, they believe something that stupid because the other people around them believe something that stupid. I mean, how do religions keep their hold? Because you've got these people in this religious environment, in this religious community, and well, hell, everybody else around me believes in God, and everybody else goes to church on Sunday, and everybody else around me talks to an invisible man in the sky, and so therefore that must be normal, and that's how I'm going to decide what is normal, and that's what I'm going to mimic. And that's how that works. And that's why these people need to be allowed to die off, and we've got to stop keeping them alive with welfare and WIC and food stamps. And when I say we, and it's the royal we, I know, if any of you out there are calling me on that, good job, because I like to encourage critical thinking among my audience. If there are any of you out there who just fucking mindlessly believe everything I say without applying critical thinking, please do me a favor and fucking shoot yourselves, because you don't deserve to live either. All right. Yes, I used the royal we. What do I want to talk about now? Where's my list? I have something of a list. I came up with a new term. It's called dead-end dating. Dead-end dating is when you date somebody and you know that this person isn't right for you in the long run, but you're just dating them anyway. And I distinguish this from like a fuck buddy. Or like if you're just dating somebody because you like having sex with them, that's not dead-end dating. You're getting sex. But dead-end dating is the kind of dating where you're dating somebody, and maybe the sex is good, whatever, but you also, you know it doesn't have any long-term potential, but you're not, and let me say that, you know it doesn't have any long-term, you know you're, take two. Dead-end dating is when you're dating somebody you know has no long-term potential for you, and you're looking for something long-term, and you're not actively looking for somebody other than the person you're dead-end dating, because you're expecting that somehow or another the person you're dead-end dating is going to change, or that you'll just be able to maintain this status quo forever. So if you're dead-end dating, stop it. I need to stop saying "so" as a transition, because it's not. That's me almost dropping stuff. Yes, let's talk about white guilt. Let's talk about... oh, God. We endured here in Fort Collins another edition of the Better Business Bureau Torch Awards. This isn't the white guilt part. I'm flying all over the place. Randy, how am I on time? Thank you, dear. The Better Business Bureau Torch Awards is this an award ceremony. I don't know if they do this in other places other than Fort Collins. I don't know if this is only the BBB in Fort Collins, or if this is a BBB thing that's done all over the place. But anyhow, basically, it's, and there are all sorts of other versions of this out there, so this is not to pick on this specific occurrence of this, but it's one of those things where a bunch of corporations and businesses get together and give each other awards for having ethics. And this shit always just cracks me up, because as I have said before, if you have to tell somebody you have ethics, it's because you don't. Right? We've been over this 100 times. If you have to tell somebody you're not racist, it's because you're racist. If you have to tell somebody that you're a good person, it's because you're not a good person. And if you have to give each other, if you have to form an organization to give each other awards for being ethical, the most hilarious part, God, this was fucking hilarious. Let's go back to colleges and the nexus of political correctness. This was fucking hilarious. There's this video of these college students talking about how they've learned so much about ethics, and I think they learned it from some BBB-related thing, and they're like, yeah, wow, I know, I just can't run a company if I'm not an ethical person. Okay, let's look, first of all, here's what I want to know. And I know the answer. Why am I saying here's what I want to know? I know the fucking answer. The answer is lack of parenting and public schools. How do you get to college without being familiar with the concept of ethics? I mean, how do you make it through 18 years or more of your life without being exposed to the idea of not killing people, of not stealing from people, of not falsifying your financial records, of treating your employees fairly? I mean, how do you get, and I just answered it, public school and a lack of parenting. And watching these college students in this film gush about this awesome discovery they've made about how, wow, ethics, wow. You know, and it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, this is the fucking future of America, quote unquote. We're so fucked. Then the other thing, of course, is when one of them said, that was me just moaning and groaning, my knee hurts, I'm getting old. My knee doesn't really hurt, I was just making that up. I'm seriously about to fall asleep. All right. The other hilarious part was, you know, when these idiots are saying things like, I know that I can't succeed in business if I'm not ethical. Really? Pretty sure a lot of people working at Enron made a lot of money before it went under. Let's see, you can't succeed in business if you're not ethical. Am I the only one who remembers the bailout of the banking corporations after they flushed all their money down the toilet on bad debts? Am I the only one who remembers the bailout of the automobile corporations? Am I the only one who knows about all the money that the government has funneled into these green energy corporations that then did nothing? I mean, am I the only person who's ever heard of the Obamacare website that doesn't work, even though it got paid for? So, I mean, this idea that I can't be successful in business without ethics, well, of course you can. Because if you're not ethical, all you have to do is either have a government contract or be, quote unquote, too big to fail, and then the government will bail you out. So as long as we live in a statist society where corporations are protected by the government and protected in multiple senses, but in this case I specifically mean protected from failure, right? I mean, you can be the president of a bank and be completely unethical and get caught, and you can get your golden parachute and you can go retire with your billions of dollars, and the government, using money from the taxpayers, from people who actually work for a living and create value and are not on welfare and WIC and food stamps, the government will bail the banking corporation out and keep everything going. So to say you can't succeed in business if you don't have ethics, you have to be stupid to believe that. Now, in a free market, in an ANCAP society, yes, if you didn't have ethics and you tried to have a business, you would most likely fail. But in our state of society, ethics is completely unnecessary, especially when the government devotes so much of its time and resources and money and power to killing people, which last time I checked, killing people is a violation of ethics. Oh, but that's right. The president has black skin now, so it's okay to kill people, especially if you do it with flying robots. So there's that. Randy, how am I on time, babe? Thank you, darling. Thank you, darling. Did I talk about Shenandoah? No, I didn't talk about... Oh, wait. I was going to talk about white guilt first. That'll segue into Shenandoah. I also had to suffer through white guilt. The Broadway show Memphis came through. Basically, here's the plot summary of the Broadway show Memphis. White people should feel guilty because of slavery. So that's done. And... God, I'm so fucking sick of white guilt. And it wasn't even that good. Like, Hairspray, and not the stuff you spray on your hair, but Hairspray, the musical, is about white guilt also, but it's, at least, God, it's entertaining. And fun, and really campy, and over the top, and funny. Memphis... trying to be a serious examination. And all right, here's the basic plot summary of Memphis. It's a poor, dumb, hick white guy who can't read, falls in love with this black jazz singer, and he gets a gig at a radio station, and he's playing what in the play is called race music. Let's talk about this, because this will offend some people too, because I can say the word nigger. I love when there are like movies or plays, and maybe actually it's not really so much a problem in movies, I don't think. I'm trying to think if I've watched a movie about white guilt lately. But I love in something like this, which it takes place in Memphis, Tennessee, hence the name is Memphis, right? And the music created by black people and which the main character is playing is referred to as race music. Now, if these people were really as racist as they're supposed to be, and if it was back in, I don't know what year it was actually supposed to take place in. Fuck. I have no idea. It was back in the days when there were laws against blacks and whites getting married, because at one point, the main character, the white guy, I guess really they're both main characters, the white guy and the black woman, he's talking to her about, you know, would you marry me? And she's like, we can't get married, it's against the law. And then, of course, I sat there and I said, well, wait, if you own your own body, why do you need permission from the government to get married? Oh, yeah, because homosexuals desperately need approval from the government to get married, because they can't do anything without the government's approval. And that's why they want to legalize homosexual marriage, because God forbid that they should acknowledge they own their own bodies and just make their own fucking choices. We can't make our own choices about our body without permission from the government, can we? Because we're free. Oh, yeah, you're free. That's why you need permission from the government. So anyway, that's whatever time frame. So here's what I'm trying to get around to, if I'll just start babbling. I'd love to know why the music wasn't called nigger music or even Negro music. Did anybody really in history refer to music made by black people as race music? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't around back then. And people are stupid, so maybe it is. But it's like, okay, so that's race music? Does that mean that... So music made by black people is race music. But white people make music, and don't white people also have a race? And what about yellow people music? Well, yellow people are a race. So why is only black music race music when all human beings have a race? So wouldn't that mean that all music made by people would be race music? I don't know. It's really not that big of a deal, but I'm just like, dude, I love when people, you know, they want to address racism in this historical context, like taking a play and setting it in the past and showing the racism, but nobody has the balls to say the word nigger, which is what people back then would have said. And I can say this because I'm from the South. We're all racist in the South. We all know that, right? Because all racist people come from the South. And all Southerners are racist. Because, you know, when I was watching Shenandoah, you know, it reinforced that why everybody from the South, they was fighting for slavery. All the people in the South owned slaves. And all the people in the South owned slaves. I said that. All the people in the South was racist. And all the people who went to war was fighting to keep slavery legal. That was the only reason they fought. And of course, all the people from the North. Well, none of the people in the North had slaves. I mean, just because they brought the slaves to the United States. And just because it was companies and individuals in the North who sent the ships to Africa and brought the slaves back, and it was at docks and, what's the word I'm looking for? Brain cramp. The slave auctions were held in the North and bought by Southerners and taken back. So, but, you know, but none of that matters. None of that matters because everybody, every single person in the North was not racist. And every person in the North joined the army, never mind that Abraham Lincoln had to institute the first draft in American history. Those people, they were had to be drafted to go to the South and kill other people because they cared so much about going to the South and killing people to free the slaves. And of course, while the Union armies were down there, they burned the cities and destroyed the crops, but they only burned the white people cities and the white people crops. They left the black people cities and crops there. And of course, all the times when Union armies massacred the quote-unquote freed slaves, that didn't actually happen. That's just Southern revisionism. So anyway, all I want to know is, if you're making a stage play about how racist all the white people in the South are, have the white people from the South use the word nigger, because that's what they would say. I know how I got there, because I'm from the South. I know this. Even when I was a kid in the South, in Texas, white people used the word nigger. Say, if you want to address racism, but you don't have the balls to say the word nigger, then don't address racism. Just shut the fuck up and go play on your Tumblr account or something. That's what white people would have said, I'm pretty sure. I've never heard the term race music before. And hey, like I said, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't spend enough time agonizing over my white guilt. Oh wait, I don't have any white guilt. Because I've never owned a slave, I've never sold a slave, I've never bought a slave. So anyhow, Shenandoah was awesome because, I just said the word awesome, I sound like a fucking 14-year-old girl. It was awesome. I'm sorry.
It was awesome.
That's my 14-year-old girl voice. Shenandoah. Plot summary. James Stewart is it James Stewart? God, why can't I remember his name? That's fucking terrible. Anyway, the guy. The main character. What's his name? Randy, what's his name? I don't remember. Alright, anyway, the main character. Him and his family, they live in Virginia, the war is going on, and like a good anarcho-capitalist, he's sitting the war out. He doesn't give a shit, he's, you know, not helping either side, he's not sending his sons off to fight in the war, because he gets it. And here's this great quote. So, Lieutenant Johnson says, "When are you going to take this war seriously, Anderson?" And Charlie Anderson, the main character, responds, just like a good anarcho-capitalist. He says, "Now let me tell you something, Johnson, before you get on my wrong side. My corn, I take seriously, because it's mine. And my potatoes, and tomatoes, and my fence, I take note of, because they're mine. But this war is not mine, and I don't take note of it." And I thought, yes, yes, this is an anarcho-capitalist movie. And it is, to a great extent. So if you have not seen Shenandoah, I can highly recommend you watch it. You will enjoy it. Randy, how are we doing on time? All right, I definitely do not have time to talk about Star Trek. Because I watched a bunch of original Star Trek, the only Star Trek. All the other Star Treks suck balls. Shut the fuck up. The original Star Trek, Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, Dr. McCoy, it's the greatest. It is one of the best TV shows ever. And yes, I get that a lot of Star Trek is statist. There's a lot of statism in Star Trek. But goddamn, original Star Trek, if you watch it, there's some anarcho-capitalism going on in there. And as I have said before, Captain Kirk is a better starship captain than Captain Picard. Because, among all the other things, like having hair and having sex with lots of alien girls, the key difference between the key difference between Kirk and Picard is this. The Prime Directive. Picard always obeys the Prime Directive, because Picard is a statist. Picard believes that humans exist to serve rules. Kirk, on the other hand, understands that rules exist to serve people. And that's why Kirk is like, Prime Directive, fuck that. Right? I just watched the episode, I can't remember the name now, but the one where the two planets are engaging in war, but they're not actually shooting at each other, they're doing it with computers. And so when the computer says you've been a casualty, you have to go to the disruptor station and get in and be put to death, which is like a liberal Democrat wet dream to have a society where people would actually do that. God, you fucking statists would be so happy if people were willing to just get in the disintegration chambers for you. So anyhow, you know, and Kirk's like, Spock, we have to stop this. And Spock's like, but Captain, the Prime Directive. And Kirk does his famous, no, the Prime Directive only applies to healthy civilizations. This civilization is not healthy. And it's like, yeah, when you run across a civilization of people who are fighting a war with computers and willing, and then of course there's the great speech Kirk gives where the alien president is saying, but if you destroy the computers, then the other planet will think we've reneged on reneged on our agreement, and they will attack us with real weapons, and then we'll have real war. Is that what you want? And Kirk is like, yes. And I'm like, go, motherfucker. And Kirk's like, yes, that is exactly what I want. I want you to have real war. Right now, you have this sterile, clean situation in which there's no property damage. The computers fucking decide who is supposed to be dead, and you people kill yourselves because the computer said you're supposed to be dead. And everything is clean, and there's no bleeding, and there's no wounded people. And Kirk says, yes, I want to give you real war. I want you to have bombs falling. I want there to be wounded people. I want there to be orphans. I want there to be destruction. Because when you're confronted with that, you might have to pull your heads out of your asses and make peace. And it's just like, it's brilliant. And it's intellect at the You know, in old Star Trek, it has a lot of flaws, man. Don't get me wrong. And the flaws are actually some of the fun stuff. I have this great book called The Nitpicker's Guide for Classic Trekkers, which was written by Phil Farrand, is his name. You know, where he goes through all the original episodes and nitpicks and finds inconsistencies and all this stuff. And there's a lot of things you can criticize original Star Trek for, and some of the writing is terrible, and I've talked before about how it was not a really good ensemble. You know, all the other characters like Scotty and Uhura and Sulu and Chekhov kind of got, they didn't kind of get, they were, you know, pushed to the back, and they didn't ever really get a chance to really develop those characters and let them do stuff, you know. Or Uhura got fucked by just having to say hailing frequencies open in every fucking episode, and I know Nicole Nicholas has expressed she didn't like that, and I don't blame her. But anyhow, there's a lot of flaws in Star Trek. There's a lot of flaws. There's plenty of them. But one of the things that made it so great was that for the first time, well, I shouldn't say for the first time. That could be total bullshit, because that means I've seen everything on television and could say that was for the first time. Star Trek brought concepts like that to the forefront. It was a cerebral show to an extent. I know a lot of people make fun of it because there's not enough action and not enough explosions and not enough fucking and not enough special effects and shit, and that there's all these long talky bits. Well, yeah, philosophy involves long talky bits. And so you don't have long talky bits in your life, and I get that. And that's why, damn it. Fuck, my voice is going. Thank God we're almost at the end. Oh, there's no God. And that's why, because you people today don't have any long talky bits, that's why you get into college and for the first time find out about ethics. Because you don't have long talky bits anymore where you discuss things like this, that's why you believe that a man with a Nobel Peace Prize who's elected president of the United States should be allowed to murder people in foreign countries with flying robots, and he should be celebrated for this. It's because you don't have long talky bits. It's because you have a really short attention span, and you're really stupid. And I'm right, and I didn't even get to the other big thing I wanted to talk about. Oh, Christ. All right, Randy, let's take a break, and maybe we will bang out another episode. Maybe I'll wake up. Oh, damn. Maybe I'll not fall out of the chair. Maybe I'll wake up, and we'll bang out another episode today.